This is F1 Debrief. Everything's working out just fine. Coming up on this show, we discuss silent but deadly Sutil, why we are not the definitive word, and DC's near miss.
We should apologise in advance of this show. It's going to be dreadful.
Really?
Yep, Ted Kravitz has taken a leave of absence. He's not here to help us along. It's all going to fall apart without him.
He's gone on paternity leave.
He has. That means production values are going to go down.
Yeah.
Quality is going to slip.
Right.
There's going to be a lot of filler material because there's no Ted to do all the work that nobody else can be bothered to do.
Okay.
And it's just all going to fall apart.
Are you talking about this show or are you talking about the BBC coverage?
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Timo Glock, who confirmed a new deal with Virgin Racing, announced over the weekend at his home Grand Prix. The talk was that it was until the end of 2014, but when he was interviewed on the BBC, he seemed a bit coy about the actual dates. However, he said he's happy to stay with the team now they've been through the difficult times and hopes there are good times ahead.
And with the McLaren deal backing them, I suspect he is probably right. They've got rid of the CFD nonsense. Now is a good time to join Virgin. Let's just forget about this first year and a half. We'll just wipe that under the carpet. Nothing to see here. Good on Timo.
It's been a bad week for David Coulthard, who proved that nothing has changed when he got to drive an old Mercedes W196 along with Mika Häkkinen. DC spun it and Mika had to take avoiding action. Thankfully, the pair did avoid collision because the cars are apparently priceless, irreplaceable.
What crazy fool decided it would be a good idea to put DC in that car on a wet track?
Madness.
Absolutely. Thank goodness Mika still has it. He saved the day. David Coulthard can crash a DTM car when he's the only car on the track. He managed to punt it into the wall the other week. The guy isn't safe. Stick him in a passenger seat. That's what he was made for.
It's been a good week. Well, actually, it's been a better week for Narain Kartikeyan, who, after being booted from the HRT team in favour of Daniel Ricciardo last race, was allowed back in for free practice one in Germany. He was driving Liuzzi's car and he took to Twitter to say he'd had a difficult couple of weeks around the Silverstone race, but things were getting back on track. Literally. He's not gone from HRT completely then.
Narain may not be gone, but a number of staff have been let go. HRT have been having a staff reshuffle. They've also gone to the trouble of renaming their Twitter handle. It's now HRT F1 Team, and also their Facebook page is the same. Gone be ye Hispania.
It's been a bad week for Kamui Kobayashi, who drove his girlfriend around the full Nordschleife. Around the full circuit. It's the first time she'd been a passenger beside him on a racetrack and she was scared silly. He had to do the lap at 60 kilometres an hour. He said, after one corner, she started crying. I had to slow down and finish the lap very slow. It was a very long lap. It took me nearly 20 minutes. I'll have to sell my tickets at a discount price now. I paid €89 for four laps and only went round once.
Nice sightseeing tour though. You'd really take in the whole circuit at that speed, wouldn't you?
Before we get on to qualifying, something massive happened on Friday.
Massive.
It was really big news. Will Buxton started tweeting that only two teams were going to be allowed to race and everyone else was being disqualified.
Drama!
Turns out it was actually only three teams who had to change, and the change they had to make, the FIA symbol on their overalls was a sticker and it should have been sewed on.
Yeah, it was screen printed instead of being sewn. I don't really think the guy came out of it too well, do you?
He said he was being sarcastic, but that's easy to say afterwards.
It's the ultimate guesser, isn't it? Irony doesn't work on Twitter, of course not. Breaking news of that nature, it didn't come across very well.
The thing is, and if you're going to be sarcastic, you can't do it on something like that because it's not beyond the realms of possibility that the FIA would banish seven
yes,
teams or ten
absolutely.
Teams.
Absolutely. In Formula 1, that is not a fun game to play. That's definitely the boy who cried wolf. And I may have unfollowed him because I'm petty like that. Still, massive news.
In actual news, Karin Chanduk made his big comeback driving the Lotus car. It was a bit rubbish in practice. Actually, it was a bit rubbish all weekend.
What do you make of this comeback? First question, what of Trulli?
What of him?
Yes, well, the guy's been complaining all season about his power steering. It's not to his liking, despite the fact that Heikki Kovalainen hasn't mentioned it.
No.
He's not in the slightest bit bothered. Not phased in the slightest. Trulli has been complaining and complaining and complaining. He's just not comfortable in the car and he wants a better power steering system. And in return, Lotus booted him out of his seat.
Yeah, well, supposedly it's just for this one race. Karin was saying beforehand that he knew exactly how Trulli was feeling, having had to share his seat.
Went through it
in
last
previous
year.
But I don't know. I mean, I can't see them. They said they were in talks with Trulli for renewing his contract as well. So it doesn't seem like they're trying to kick him out. They wouldn't bother saying anything if they wanted him out. But perhaps it's just a wake-up call to see to see if it is Trilly or the power steering. Maybe if you get another driver in there, you can see where the problem really lies.
It could be that. And where does the problem lie?
With the car, I think.
Well, the way Karim was driving it, you'd think that car was a terrible car. It was barely pointing in the right direction at any point during the weekend. It was a ragged practice session. Didn't get a lot better in qualifying. And the race, it just went from bad to worse, didn't it? He finished, what, 4 laps down?
Yeah.
Couldn't keep up with the HRT. Daniel, who made his race debut in the previous race, in a slower car than the Lotus, finished way, way ahead of Paul Caroon. And I think Daniel's debut was much better.
Yeah, I mean, they're almost on the same level because obviously Ricardo hasn't had any experience except for one previous race, whereas Chandock had all that experience last year, but he's not driven on Pirelli tyres. So he doesn't know how
yes,
it all handles.
Yes, we spoke earlier in the season about Karun's aborted practice sessions. He binned it after one lap.
Yep.
Then he got 2 laps in after it rained during free practice. So, he's not had experience of the Lotus in a race condition. Last year, he was in the Hispania. That wasn't as good a car. He's got a lot to learn. I just feel he should have done better at the end of the weekend.
I think perhaps we were expecting too much. We like him. He's a bit of an expert on Formula One. We want him to do well. He always comes across well in interviews and things. And then he went out and it was actually just a big disappointment, really.
Interesting. I think that Lotus should run him again in Hungary because he's had his one race. You know, he's had the one race to learn everything. He's got to learn the DRS. He's got to learn the curves. He's got to learn about the new tyres. Now it's fresh in his mind. They should just put him in the car for one more race just to see how he handles it. And if he doesn't improve, then just bin him and just say, okay, that didn't work out. We'll rethink it next year.
Definitely better to put him in Hungary than wait till after the break where he gets rusty all over again.
Yes.
But then that's Trilly out for quite a long time if they're going to bring him back in.
Interesting.
Afterwards.
Lotus know the car isn't as good as it should be. So now is the time to test that drivers. It's the right time because at some point the car's going to click. They're going to get all their components together and it'll be fine. And then, you know, they'll start finding some pace and bagging some points. So now is the time to figure out their driver lineup. And maybe they are considering Karun for next year. After this weekend, I'm not convinced he's the right man either, despite, you know, going into this weekend, I would have said, absolutely, what a good choice. And then coming out of it, I'm thinking, that could have been better.
We've been saying all year that qualifying is not very good this season, but actually it wasn't too bad this weekend.
My favourite qualifying session of the year, I think. Now, not a high benchmark to beat, in fairness, but I did enjoy it from beginning to end. I watched the whole thing, and I wasn't particularly bored at any point. You know, there was no dead time. Cars were always out there doing things. I liked that a lot of cars ran the softer tyre at the end of Q1.
Yeah.
That made some people think.
There was always the threat of rain, even though there was no rain over the whole weekend, which is just annoying. The weather predictions really annoyed me.
Right.
But there was always the threat of rain, so the cars wanted to get out and do a lap as soon as they could, or most of them did.
Yep.
And then obviously there was the fact that Vettel wasn't quite on it this weekend.
Well, no, there were runs right to the last. And that's key. That's what we want in qualifying.
They didn't secure it halfway through Q3. It went right to the end.
Indeed. So I enjoy qualifying. I'm thinking that maybe the lower teams have sussed out the tyres enough to put pressure on the mid teams. You know, there could be a big fight on to get into Q2. And that might, you know, that could all kick off.
There's no room for tyre saving anymore because you have to battle to get the position.
Indeed.
So Vettel failed big style in qualifying, if you can call coming third a fail. But
by his standards, yes.
The first time he's not been on the front row this year. Weber, he got his pole position, although that doesn't mean that much with Weber, but we'll discuss that later.
Because of his poor starts?
Yeah. And Lewis Hamilton was up there as well, which was a bit of a surprise because after Friday practice, both the McLaren drivers were a bit down in the dumps and Hamilton specifically said, we definitely can't challenge for pole. And it turns out he was actually just 0.05 of a second off
pole. It was so close. It was a great lap. And he was ecstatic after qualifying for the lap he'd done, for the lap he'd put in. Everything went right. And he almost so close to jumping Webber. As it happened, come to the race, didn't really matter. He jumped him anyway.
Yeah.
So that sort of diminishes the value of qualifying, really, having Webber on pole. Because you know he's going to lose it, which is a shame. But yeah, it was a very, very good lap from Hamilton. I think we saw that the second drivers in Ferrari and McLaren both failed to live up to their number one teammates. You had Jenson Button, who was way down the order, and Massa couldn't hold a candle to Alonso yet again.
Yeah. The only other main talking points from qualifying were that Kobayashi was an unexpected big name out in the first session.
Mm-hmm. Big name faller.
Yes. Sauber aren't usually They're not always near the top, but they're not usually down there.
Didn't come together for them.
No. And Buemi, he was excluded after qualifying for a fuel thing.
Irregularity.
Yeah.
Do we want to quote any quotes and then get into any scientific analysis as to what went wrong?
No, not really. His post-quali sample was different to his pre-quali sample. That's all I've got. And it was only marginal as well.
Can I pay tribute to the stewards for picking this up in qualifying? We talked, at the beginning, it was in Australia, I think, when stewards waited until after the race to disqualify two Saubers for a rear wing irregularity, and it was only it was a very, very small margin it was out. And I complained that it could have been picked up earlier in the weekend, and it certainly should have been picked up in qualifying. Thus, the problem would have been fixed, the cars would have been pushed to the back, and then the race results would have stood. And I called the stewards lazy, I think, at the time. I
said, you called them all manner of names.
It annoyed me, and I didn't think they were doing their job properly. And in this instance, they did exactly what they should have done. They checked the fuel after qualifying. The problem was sorted on Saturday. Obviously affected Buemi on Sunday, but come the end of Sunday, the results stood, and that's what mattered. That's what we want to see. That's stewards doing their job and the process working correctly. So all credit to them. Again, nothing to complain about. This is getting annoying. Second race in a row, and everything's working out just fine.
The race. I have a bit of a rant to make because the coverage was awful, terrible, ridiculous.
Go on. Get mad. Get angry. Tell us what you really think.
When you're in a particular country and you have lots of home drivers, you sort of expect there to be a bit more coverage of the German drivers. I can understand that. There was, six of them, five of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that we would have seen more of them, but it was absolutely ridiculous. There was one moment where we were watching some other battle on track and they decided the important information we needed at the bottom of the screen was Michael Schumacher's pit time. Even though we weren't watching him, he wasn't particularly in the hunt for any results
anywhere. The
graphics
definitely failed. There were no on-screen. The race control messages were just missing. Most of that information was gone.
Messages. Brundle had to tell us that Heidfeld was being investigated for an incident that we didn't even see.
Because there was no replays.
There were replays, but not of anything useful.
Again,
what is the obsession this year with after one or two laps, as soon as DRS is enabled, they start replaying the whole of the first lap over and over again, even though nothing interesting happened.
Yes.
And the one interesting thing that did happen, they didn't show it.
You're right. I mean, the last time you'd ever want to show a replay is the minute DRS is enabled, because that basically means overtaking happens now. And, you know, that at that point in time, you absolutely want to see on-track action. I don't need to see so many start replays in quick succession. What I quite like is just show us a quick replay of the start. We'll get the gist of it. Maybe 20 laps later, then show us another replay and another replay. You know, I do want to see the replays. I just don't want to see them all at once. Give me a picture in picture of what's going on the track. Anything other than a slow-mo replay of the start.
It's a whole lap missed of the action,
yeah.
Watching the replays, which I think we've mentioned before because they've been doing it all year, but it's really getting annoying.
It is. You're right. The world feed direction was diabolical.
We sat on board with Rosberg for about 5 minutes,
watching
him go around. And I can't remember if he was trying to overtake someone, but he wasn't being very successful. And I'm sure there was something else going on that we could have been looking at.
Indeed. There definitely was the obsession with the local drivers. Michael Schumacher in the pits, I saw far too much. Every single pit stop I think I saw of Michael Schumacher. It was dreadful.
But some of the pit stops where we did want information with how long they'd been in there, some
missing.
Of them were crucial. Nothing.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I mean, we know after the race now, from I think Ferrari gave out their stats. Alonso, I think, was fastest across all the pit stops during the race. Alonso was the quickest guy consistently.
If you add them all up.
If you add them all up, and I think Webber was the slowest guy. But we didn't have that information during the race like we normally do because the graphics were just failing. The information wasn't coming up, as if the timing wasn't working or something was broken down the system. Worse than that, though, I would like to complain about BBC coverage. As we mentioned at the start of the show, without Ted Kravitz, BBC F1 coverage was diabolical.
It did seem to fall apart.
Goodness me, on Saturday was some of the worst coverage I've seen from... I mean, BBC is under pressure not to keep Formula 1. They've got other channels and, you know, they're trying to cut back on their finances. And what they really don't want right now is a disaster of a coverage. And that's what we got on Saturday. And on Sunday, it wasn't much better. Now, last time the BBC put out some terrible coverage, I think they won an award for it. So I'm expected to be, you know...
Could happen.
Don't worry, the German Grand Prix will be an award-winning show, no question. But it was just awful to watch.
Well, I think what really sums it up is, obviously, we have TED News quite a lot. We enjoy a good bit of TED News, and there's usually a little video diary after the race put up on the website. And this time, because TED wasn't there, they had Lee doing it. And it it was nothing. It was like, here's my Kangaroo TV, here's how I watch.
Yeah.
Which is nothing. That's not information. Where's what we need?
I do believe this weekend showed up the talent from the non-talent. By taking away that vital cog, the wheels came off. And thankfully, I think we learned today that Ted will be back for the next race, despite saying he was taking two races off. I guess he's been sort of dragged back from his paternity leave. Tip, we kind of need you to make this coverage work, and we're probably on the verge of losing it as it is. Please come back because we need you. I'm speculating, but I'm guessing that it was very, very clear that it all fell apart on Saturday, and it barely got better on Sunday.
We've had a few voicemails this week about the race. Stephen, in particular, he said that I think his internet has been a bit shocking recently, and so he was watching without any of the information he might like.
The last 3-ish seasons when I've been watching F1, I've done so with live timing and the side podcast comments. And as such, I'm in a permanent state of information overload. Today, I watched my first race unplugged in all that time, and I feel like I missed out on so much. One note I made said, lap 18, I have no idea what's going on outside the top four. I had no idea what position anyone was in, what the gaps were. How did that manage without the internet for so long?
That was a particularly difficult race to follow without any data, because so much was going on up front. That was the focus of the attention. We've mentioned that we didn't see the De Resta Heidfeld replay. There were a couple of incidents. I think we missed Perez's incident. He went off and had to pit almost immediately after. We didn't see what happened there. We still don't know what happened.
People kept retiring into the garages and we never saw them.
No. It was a bad race. It was a tough race. I mean, a lot of races this year have been difficult to follow. Valencia was probably the only one I would have coped with following without any kind of live data. It's essential. There's no question about it. Whether you like it or not, Formula One is a complicated sport. There's a lot going on this year. You need this external data. How anybody, any casual fan watches it just by lounging around on the sofa watching TV, I really don't know, because the commentators don't do a good enough job. Race Control didn't do a good enough job with their messages. And there's not enough information for the average fan.
As we mentioned earlier, Webber on pole, that didn't last very long. And to be honest, it wasn't really a surprise that he started so poorly, because in our race thread, where all the comments were happening, we put up a poll saying, will Webber actually lead a lap this race? Because his starts have not been good.
Yeah, it was a landslide. It was 80% of the voters decided that Webber was going to get jumped at the start. And that's what happened. I don't know whether it's a Red Bull system or whether it's just a Mark Webber system. There's slightly a fault there. He didn't get a good start. He did manage to make up for it later in the race. He did lead a lap in the end.
Yes.
That finally happened.
He got it back again.
Thank goodness.
But the lead at the beginning went to Hamilton, and that's pretty much where it stayed. But I really liked that there was battling for the lead between four cars and then three cars all the way through. I mean, it died off a bit towards the end, but there were moments where there were four cars in a train and we thought any of them could lead.
Absolutely. There was there was two packs, effectively. You had Webber, Alonso and Hamilton up front, and then you had the second pack, which was Massa, Button and Vettel, at least as long as Button stayed in the race.
Yeah.
So those were overlapping depending on pit stops. So that was interesting to watch. Every time a car came out of the pit lane, it was always close with the guy coming down the main straight. That was really nice. That was like the old days of refueling, wasn't it? Wasn't that back to yay? Pit stops make a difference. So that was good to see. And again, there was no time to look down the midfield. Adrian Sutil did really well. He had a really good race. I don't recall seeing much of him.
No.
It just never had time. It was non-stop action up the front.
Button, his race was screwed by McLaren again. Second race in a row, not his fault. The car, the team let him down.
His title challenge ends here. There.
If it ever got started.
That was it. I don't think there's no coming back from that. I don't know why it's always that car. Maybe it's just coincidence. Maybe they've got the best team working for Lewis and the second best engineers working for Jensen. Hard to say. Maybe he drives it differently. Maybe it's just the way his style is. Maybe it's just bad luck.
That non-existent incident between Paul De Resta and Nick Heidfeld happened on the first lap, and Heidfeld would have been given a drive-through penalty, except by the time that announcement came through, he'd been taken off by Buemi.
Hmm. Where do you stand on the Buemi versus Heidfeld incident then?
Well, I think it looks quite like the Button-Hamilton incident that we had to debate last time, where
in Canada,
Buemi was just going across the racing line and Heidfeld was steaming up behind him. So I guess I would put quite a bit of the blame on Heidfeld because he was behind.
He was the chasing car.
Yeah.
We have said before, the person behind has the most vision and the person behind has the ability to hit the brake pedal. And in this case, Nick Heidfeld didn't do that. Now, But Remy has been given a post-race penalty. He's now going to get a grid drop in, where are we next? Hungary. So he's going to get a five-place grid drop for the second race in a row, unfortunately. So the stewards blamed him. We didn't find out from the stewards what their reasoning was, as we did. We talked about in Silverstone how good it was that Nigel Mansell explained stuff to us.
Yeah.
Tom Christensen was the driver steward at this race. He never really got right. No one asked him, I guess, but we never learned from him what the exact reasoning was. Why was it Buemi who was in front who got the penalty? You could see from the camera angles that Buemi was looking in his left mirror and Nick Heidfeld was on his right. The key difference, I think, between this race and Canada was a wet race. There was a lot of spray.
Yeah.
So you couldn't see in your wing mirrors. Jensen and Hamilton came out of the corner and it was almost immediately after the corner that the pass was attempted and failed. Whereas with Buemi and Heidfeld, it was at the end of a longer straight going into the next corner. You're right, Buemi did stick to the exact racing line.
He was obviously looking for him. If he was looking in his mirror, he knew he was there. But then he didn't know which side he was.
It's tricky.
And I mean, what can you penalise him for looking the wrong way? I don't know.
Well, it's his. I mean, if he looked in the left mirror and couldn't see Heidfeld, he should have been able to guess that he was on his right
on the other side.
He's got to be somewhere. Most drivers, I think, if you were going to make the pass there, you'd go on the left, go on the inside.
Yeah.
So Heidfeld picked the wrong place to make a pass. Heidfeld definitely felt Buemi was at fault. He raised his hand whilst crashing.
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive crash. He flew up a bit and then bounced in. There's gravel spraying everywhere.
I have to say, for the second time this season, we've seen a Renault with four wheels off the ground,
yeah,
flying through the air.
Yeah,
I'm worried about that car and its aerodynamic stability.
Hit a bump and they go flying.
Was it Petrov hit a bump? Some race I can't recall now. Where did he hit a bump? I don't know where it was, but he flew over a grass bump and it was four wheels clean off the ground and you saw the underside of the Renault. When Buemi caught Heidfeld again flew in here. He lost his front wing, lost the front downforce, and you saw the bottom of the Renault. Now, I don't recall seeing the underside of any other car this season. I really do wonder if the aerodynamics are just slightly awry because it really looked like it could roll. It was, it could have landed in any direction. And it was a gravel trap. So then what would have happened to Heidfeld? So again, I don't know why it is, just something I wanted to highlight. Two times this season, I've seen the underfloor of the Renault.
But really, the conclusion on the Buemi incident is that the stewards have made their decision.
It seems it's a harsh one to me. I think Nick Heidfeld should have hit the brake pedal. He could see Buemi was moving across in front of him. He had a chance to back out of it and he didn't.
Hey guys, it's Davin, just here sharing my thoughts on the German Grand Prix. First of all, nice work for Lewis Hamilton and McLaren. They gave him a real comfortable car this weekend. His qualifying lap was just mega, and I just loved watching that one. And then during the race, he just seemed real in control the entire time. Great dogfighting, good pace. I think my favorite part of the whole race was when he put his finger on the button on the radio to his team and just said, "Don't talk to me while I'm racing," which really showed how focused he was for the whole weekend. So that was exciting to see. Fernando Alonso, it's more kind of a double, like, whoopee for Ferrari and for Alonso, too, because Ferrari is starting to figure out how to give Alonso a more consistently front-running car, which is good for Alonso. I mean, Alonso's not my favorite, but I don't want to see a Ferrari too far near the back because they're supposed to be my, quote-unquote, like, Dick Dastardly villains of Formula One. So they need to have a fast car, and Alonso can put that car up there to keep the race exciting. Mark Webber for third, I mean, good for him. I feel like he needs his own special grid spot whenever he gets pole. That's about 40 spaces up, so that when he loses spots on the start, he can still lead into turn one. He drove a pretty solid race, and I hope that he can work on his starts, because if he could actually stay in front for the first corner ever, then he might finish a race on the top step. And then Vettel just didn't seem to be on form this weekend, which brought a huge smile to my face. I like to coin that phrase, the Vettel, because Martin Brundle and I were thinking kind of the same thing when he threw his car off somewhere in the beginning of the race. And Brundle said, "Well, you know, we haven't seen that many mistakes from Sebastian Vettel." And I was like, "What about 2010 and 2009 and 2008? But anyway, that's not the point. It was interesting to see how he kind of floundered mid-race. But I guess that's kind of what happens when you put cars in front of them.
Vettel did seem to be very out of sorts this weekend. We've talked extensively about the fact that he can't drive very well in traffic. And there was another clear example of him trying to overtake, failing, and then waiting for a pit stop. But he did just, even apart from that, he just didn't seem to be having a good weekend at all. He did spin off when he touched some wet turf stuff. He had a big spin.
Not for the first time. We saw that in Canada when he was being hounded by Button. There's almost a replica spin in that sense. What happened to your home crowd bringing you half a second of performance?
Losing you half a second.
They seemed to steal his performance.
That's interesting.
They stole his performance and gave it to Michael.
They did have to share it through a few. Well, you say they gave it to Michael, but he did exactly the same move. Same corner.
He did a Vettel. Yes. Oops. You don't want that kind of spin named after you. I don't know what else to say about Vettel. He just proved everything we've said before. He couldn't overtake. He followed Massa for lap after lap. So that's what he does. He just circulates round and round and round. He's got DRS, made no difference. He's got Kurs, made no difference. He's got the best car in the field, made no difference. Massa, easy to overtake, made no difference. It was shocking.
Massa and Vettel. It was so weird. They waited until the very last lap to make that final pit stop. I mean, in the comments, people were going, oh, what happens if they don't make these tyre changes? What kind of penalty do they get if they don't use both compounds? And I'm like, why are we talking about this? I don't understand. They're not going to wait till the very end. And then they almost did.
They couldn't have left it any later. It was strange. You got the impression that on the pit wall, they were sort of outstaring each other and no one was going to blink and no one was going to make that call.
It did seem as though possibly Vettel made a mistake because there was team radio to him saying, on this lap, do the opposite to whatever Massa does. So if he comes in, you stay out. If he stays out, you come in. That didn't happen.
No. We don't know if that was a dummy or whether Vettel was just too daft to comprehend it.
He just came too late. Maybe they hadn't decided.
Yeah. I don't know. The last tyre, every team was trying to avoid running on the final tyre. And you could see they were leaving it as late as they possibly could. And yet, when they ran it, it had more performance than they expected. Now, fair enough. It's great that Massa and Vettel could run so far on the tyres they were running. There was no degradation. Both cars were matched evenly, which is unusual. Usually you'd expect somebody to fall off the cliff in terms of tyre performance. That didn't happen. Maybe the teams were waiting for that event to occur. But I can't see why they couldn't have brought both cars in earlier and got more performance off of that final tyre.
Yeah, we actually had a voicemail from Mike. He mentions this subject as well.
Hey, what's up, Side Podcast? It's Mike in New York. Just finished watching the German Grand Prix live and wanted to share my thoughts with you on it. Thought it was a great race, especially compared to the last few. I just felt the last few races for me were kind of flat compared to the start of the season. So it's been good to see things mixed up a little bit, to see Weber on pole the last couple races and not Vettel. And especially in this race, to see Vettel finish outside of the top three was just something else. It was a good start. We saw a few lead changes. And it was real interesting, too, at the very end, how the late pit stops came into play, too. I'm sure that the track temperature had a lot more to do with that than anything else. But nonetheless, it was real interesting. It was good, again, to see things mixed up, to see Hamilton finish on top after... Yeah, the last few races that he's had, that's certainly good for him. A great race for Adrian Sutil, too. See him finish as high as he did. And it was great to see Chandok in for Trulli, too. So there's my thoughts. Enjoyed it very much. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Leaving the pit stops till the last minute seemed like a really weird decision anyway, because they would have just been following each other in and it should have just come out the same order. But obviously Ferrari ruined it.
Yes, and they almost ruined the race for me because I was so excited that Vettel would end up fifth. That would have been such a great, that would have been a win for me if he'd ended up there. And yet at the very, very key moment when all eyes were on the Ferrari crew, they dropped it. They choked.
A slow stop.
It went wrong. And you saw Massa just have to watch Vettel sail on by. And that really was a disappointing end to the race. It was the only thing I didn't like about the race. And there is an argument to say that, pit stops take away from the Formula One, because on track, Vettel had nothing. And again, he was saved by pit stops. He was saved by the tyre changes. His crew saved his race for him. And so maybe that's one mark. It's a black mark in the name of pit stops, because it ruined the race for me.
You know, there's a chicane before the last corner, and it seems like the track used to go one way and now it goes another, mm-hmm. or there's a different layout, and it just diverges for a minute and then joins together.
Yes, I didn't Button make good use of that when he couldn't keep it on track.
Yeah,
I vaguely recall.
A few drivers found that a useful piece of time.
A skate road.
What I think would be really good is if it was legal to use both ways, but they each held a different sort of challenge. Like, you know, we watched Crashed Ice, and sometimes they split up the ice track where there's a bump one way or a jump the other way.
Right, so there's a fast way and a slow way.
Yeah.
But the fast way is harder.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to diverge the track at that point to enable overtaking?
It's only a little way, so you'd be able to see both at the same time. But I just thought that was an interesting thing. It might make it a bit more.
That might be an alternate to DRS.
Yeah.
That's the one overtaking point. If you can go the hard way around that, you know, that might work. I'm into that, and it wouldn't cost anything. No track modifications. You could just make the decision as you approach the corner.
Just a thought.
I like that idea. What does anyone listen? Do tell us in the comments. Let us know. Sidepodcast.com. And on the comments for this thread, would that make for good racing, or would it make it just a bit farcical?
It's a bit wacky races. So Hamilton, he won the race, took his second win of the year. Very happy about that, he was too.
Mm-hmm.
He was joined on the podium by Alonso and Webber, but only just by Alonso because his car ran out of fuel on the in-lap and he had to hitch a lift.
Yes, wasn't that fun? Didn't we like that?
I liked it, but...
How nice was Webber?
I was a bit annoyed I didn't see the bit where he actually got on the car.
Is that a bit you wanted to see?
Yeah, I would like him saying...
You wanted him there thumbing a lift?
Yeah.
Hello, help!
I'm stranded, someone save me. And Webber stopping and being all heroic about it.
It was lovely. We've seen it before. It was a nice nod to Formula One history, I think. It was
also
good to see that again.
Nice that the stewards didn't penalise.
They didn't penalise Hamilton for doing donuts in Silverstone, and they cast a blind eye to this too, which is good. Let's see more of that. Let's see more interesting post-race celebrations. Again, Ferrari, slightly naughty for not getting their car back in one piece. There was enough fuel in it. They didn't get penalised. If they did that in qualifying, not allowed, but they do get away with it because it was in the race. Interesting, there was no radio messages to save fuel to Alonso come the end of the race, as there was for Hamilton at the last one.
They didn't notice until it was too late.
Maybe they just didn't know. But it was great. It was a great end to the race. Some great pictures. Really good to see.
I had a couple of messages about the race. Rolando said, dethroned for the second race is Sir Vettel. Formula One has once again become entertaining. Congrats to Lewis. Also, a big congrats to Mr. Crash Crashy himself, Adrian Sutil, and Vijay Mallya on finally getting a decent finish post foot in mouth about the quality of F1's Indian drivers. I think the team needed that result. Also, Adrian, after smashing up another expensive non-F1 car earlier in the week, looking forward to Hungary. Show of hands of people who would like to see a race on the 14-mile track. Not really.
That would be quite hard to follow. Adrian Sutil did. He just took a road car around there and he scraped some paint off it, I think. No major damage done.
No. And the next message says, hello, Sidepodcast. It's Tyler from the US and I just watched the German GP. Wow, how about Sebastian Vettel? Is it just me or is he too good for his own good? He seems to be able to only win if he gets pole or close to it. Honestly, I think he doesn't have the skills to be behind people during the race and pass them. Great job for Lewis Hamilton. He really deserves this win after all the previous controversy he's been through. This season seems like red versus blue, Ferrari versus Red Bull. And soon McLaren will probably jump into the mix and give Red Bull and Ferrari a run for their money. Isn't that what they just did?
Indeed. David Coulthard said after the race, the jury is still out on Vettel's overtaking. I'd say the jury has cast their verdict and they've closed the case and gone home.
I loved it. He was like, people say.
No.
No, people see.
People know. People can tell. You can't be good at everything. You can be good at leading from the front in a fast car. You can be utterly hopeless in traffic.
It's time for Paul's performance report. And despite his internet troubles, Stephen did manage to call us with a note on his favourite driver.
Heidfeld.
Yeah, Heidfeld pretty much sums it up, even though we didn't see it.
After the race, Paul de Resta did highlight the fact that Hülkenberg is taking his seat every Friday and it's causing him problems. I think we mentioned it previously, and now he is publicly complaining that he's not getting enough seat time on Friday and that's affecting his weekend. So it's good that he's spoken out about that. I think he probably looked at Sutil's finishing position and thought, I should have had some of that, and this is hurting me.
Interesting, I didn't know that. He must know what that's like, though, having spent last year doing all Fridays.
I think he's probably more confident of his position in the team, and now he feels like he could throw his weight around a bit. I don't know. I noticed that after the race, he said, I'm not happy with this situation.
Last race, we sort of debuted the concept of Daniel's Day Out.
Mm.
I didn't really think it was going to catch on, but it has.
Okay.
Davin actually sent us his report for Daniel's Day Out.
Reliable.
Yeah, I don't suppose you could ask for much more, given that he beat Chandok and actually put him to shame.
He did well. Paul Liuzzi had the unreliability again, and he brought the car home. That's what he had to do. And I don't think he managed to challenge the Virgins, which is maybe the next thing, his next target on his roadmap. But he did well. He did good.
I don't know if this was part of part of the fun and games, but in the comments, people were summing up Chandok's race in one word as well, and RCC said overwhelmed, which I thought was a good word.
He was overwhelmed? Who was overwhelmed?
Chandok was.
She was overwhelmed by the whole experience.
Yeah.
That's good. That probably sums it up a lot. A lot of pressure on his shoulders. We should recognise that too.
It's time for Rate the Race, but I must say, I am losing the will to do this feature every week because it just gets worse. We get so much grief for it. There's controversy over you giving the last race a 10.
Okay. It's just an opinion. You're welcome to disagree with it. I can't really be controversial. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying this is what I think and these are the reasons why I think it.
Yeah, and people will not get over the fact that we rated Canada so lowly.
It's not a it's not like Christine's rankings, which are clearly definitive and above any kind of, you know, complaint or criticism. This is just an opinion. You're welcome to disagree with it. I'm probably wrong.
But if we must continue with it, rate the race.
Stiff upper lip.
Yes.
That's what you need. Okay, I'm going to rate this one first.
Okay.
Tricky, I would say. I did rather rate Silverstone quite highly, didn't I?
Are you going to say you've overrated that one?
Well, the thing is with Silverstone, most of those points came from Murray Walker and David Croft commentating. I'll be honest with you, it didn't really matter if the track was dreadful. I'd have probably given it a 10. But I enjoyed this race more than I enjoyed the Silverstone race. It just didn't have Murray Walker commentating. You see where I'm coming from with my reasoning. I'm being very explicit about my reasoning here.
So if you've got less for commentating, more for the race, that's still a 10 then?
It's probably not a 10 because the final lap did annoy me.
Okay.
The final lap annoyed me, and so I'm going to take some points away with it. From that, I'm going to give it a 9.8.
A 9.8?
Point two away from a fight in the pit stops, which just ruined the race.
0.8. I will have to punch you.
You don't like my points. Okay, what are you giving it?
I am going to rate this race with an 8. Because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good race, good strong battling throughout, lots of incidents, very good stuff. I found quite a lot of it a bit weird, to be honest.
Weird?
Well, the leaving the pit stop until the very last lap.
Unusual.
That's weird. And also there was the moment when I think it was in the middle where there were pit stops and Hamilton came out in front of Webber and we were like, oh, that's odd. And then Alonso came out in front of Hamilton. It's
right.
How did that happen?
Okay,
it
because
it didn't really make sense.
Yes, what you're talking about here is the undercut not working. We've seen this during the season. The guy who pits first, he comes out in front.
I just got my head around the undercut, and now they've reversed it.
Yes, it didn't work out so well because obviously the teams were worried about these tyres and they weren't working correctly. You did see that Hamilton could keep Webber at bay because he got his tyres working correctly, but Alonso couldn't keep Hamilton at bay because his car didn't work on the cold tyres. So it was mostly, I think, just our entire management and the way, you know, teams were trying to work out when were the best time to come in for their car. And that was what was different at this race, which was nice. It's good when all the cars don't pit at exactly the same time and come out exactly the same order.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was good. It was just slightly odd. And I think also the BBC's failings didn't help because Brundle was like, how did this happen? I don't understand. Webber, he didn't do anything wrong. He did a fine pit stop and now he's just lost two places. Like, thanks, I can see that. I need you to tell me why.
Right. He didn't know. No. He needs some post-race analysis. Like, you can see in their heads they were expecting something to happen.
Yeah.
I think in the comments we're expecting something to happen and clearly the opposite.
So I'm going with an 8.
An 8, around it. No points, no decimal place.
No, I don't do that. And your driver of the day.
Yeah, tough. Well,
Do you want me to go first?
I've got mine. Go on if you know.
Mine is Adrian Sutil. Because like you said earlier, he did really well. Considering how crash happy he is, he kept his nose clean. He put in a pretty good performance and finished high up in the points. He's moved his team forward a place in the championship.
Right.
They've jumped, I think it was Toro Rosso. And yeah, I didn't see him all race.
No.
But I think he did a good job.
He was silent but deadly. He benefited. Yeah. He benefited from Paul Jensen Button's lack of luck. So that gained him a place. But that was the only place that was sort of handed to him. The rest of them he earned.
He seemed to hold his own when you would expect Sutil not to be able to do that.
Yes, I would also add that I wasn't even expecting Sutil to still be racing at this point of the season, given his unfortunate incident with the champagne glass. I would have thought he'd have just been gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, good luck. You know, credit to him for still racing. I can't argue with that one. I don't know if I can beat you either. I don't know if I can outsell my driver of the day here. I'll try.
You can have Sutil too if you like.
The thing is, Lewis Hamilton did an amazing job. We've seen how he's capable of driving. In Monaco, we saw what damage he can do to other drivers. This race, I don't think he scratched another car's paintwork. every single passing move was absolutely precise. Was never, when he held back Webber, he just flipped out, you know, he just flipped the car across the track enough. It was absolute car control. You know, he didn't bump into Webber, but he gave Webber the message that you're not coming through. And that was precision driving. It was much like the drive we saw from Jensen in Brazil when he won his world championship. It was like, I know what I'm doing here. I know where I'm putting this car. And every pass was brilliant. He lost one position. He blamed radio noise on the fact he lost the position to Webber, but he got it back straight away. Classic Hamilton maneuver. Loved that. He didn't put a foot wrong. How can you fault it?
He did do a very good job. And some people have been criticising him because in the press conference he says, oh, this was the best race ever. And he said that last time and he said that the time before. But
it always is the best race ever.
But I do think he keeps on getting better. And so each race is going to be better.
He's going to have to go some to top that one. It was him who did, you know, he made the difference. It wasn't the car. It was all down to what he was doing in the cockpit. So if he has a better race than that, I'd love to see it.
Feedback. Just one little bit of feedback today from David, who says, dear Miss Christine and Mr. C, loving the F1 app, even reviewed it on iTunes. Anyway, I'm spending this evening watching the Monaco, Canadian and Silverstone GPs and was just wondering, how is the Delete EJ app coming along? He really is such a plonker. Aww.
EJ... who said that? I love
David.
David, I love you, David.
I must say, watching Monaco, Canada and Silverstone all in one evening, ooh, that's a lot of F1.
That is fun. I like that idea. And a good plan. Sadly, the Delete EJ app is not coming along too well. I think this race, Eddie took credit for Lewis Hamilton's win, which was nice, you know? Don't credit it to Lewis.
He's been down on McLaren all year.
Yeah, he said he provided the inspiration. To them picking up their ideas, I think. So we should, you know, doff our cats to the wonderful Eddie.
So not
Jordan.
Delete EJ, praise EJ.
Yeah. I'm working on the delete button. I've got the mute button sussed. That's the best I can do at the moment, sorry.
Housekeeping. I'd just like to take a moment to talk about my books, as I always do in every show, because I'm an author now, in case you hadn't noticed.
Right. Go on. There has been some discussion about us. All we talk about these days is apps and books.
It's true.
Which is true. But that's what excites us. Because podcasting isn't going forward. You know, there's no excitement. You know, there's no dramatic new things we can try out in podcasting. Whereas with books and apps, it's all new to us. And we like new.
Yes. And talking of new, there's a new book. Part 2 of 365 F1 Stories is out, available July to December, all covered. You can pick and choose any day of the year and you'll be able to find it in the Amazon store.
Yep.
Part 1 is now available in the iBook store.
If you were waiting for that, now available.
Yes, it is a bit of a nightmare and we're still waiting to get part 2 in there, but that should be coming soon as well.
Yes, yay for Amazon who make our lives very easy when it comes to publishing books. Yay to you, because I know you work so hard. I would suggest you were inspired or maybe motivated by how well the first book was received, and you almost immediately after you saw it available, you set to work on book 2 and worked so very hard.
There was a bit of an added pressure to do part 2, and I did work quite hard on it, and now I'm quite exhausted and need to take a year off.
Yes. So that's it. If you haven't bought the first one or you're waiting for both parts to hit before you take a look, do dive in. Have a scan through. You don't have to buy both. You can buy one. You can buy the other. You can start with part 2. Would you allow that? Is that okay with you if people just buy part 2? Because it's current. And then...
I would normally mind that. That kind of thing would usually upset me. But as it is July and the second book starts in July, that does make sense. That, so
I would personally
buy
part 2 and then consider part 1 if you like it.
Yeah.
But just to do it backwards.
And talking of books, I recently set up a Shelfari account, which is it's like a social network for books, and it's attached to Amazon. So you sign in with your Amazon account and it's brilliant. There's a post about it on Side Podcast if you want to know more about the site itself.
Link in the show notes.
Absolutely. But I also set up a Side Podcast book group and we're having great discussions there on the kind of motorsport biographies you have read or who you'd like to read.
Okay.
And other things like, what's the longest book you've read? Do you like short stories? All kinds of things. And I highly recommend joining in the fun.
So this isn't just a discussion about your book. It's about all books, all motorsport books.
You are allowed to discuss my book if you want. But
that's not the reason for existing.
It exists to discuss motorsport books, but obviously we quite often go off topic and it's just about books in general, really.
It's like a book group, but it's virtual. If you're interested in that sort of thing, check out sidepodcast.com, check out the show notes for this show, and there'll be a link to Shelfari, or search for Shelfari. That's S H E L F Shelfari.
Yeah, you can go to shelfari.com and you'll probably be able to find the Side Podcast Book Group on there as well.
Now we've talked about your thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk about apps this week. I do wish to talk about browsers. I'm sure we've covered this before, but I will say it very, very quickly. The latest version of Safari, not to be confused with Shelfari, Safari 5.1 browser is out. And that's important because it means all of the top five browsers now have new releases featuring all the updated features that Side Podcast uses. So if you're an Internet Explorer, Safari, Firefox, Chrome, or Opera user, if you can get the latest version of those browsers, and Side Podcast will be all the better for it.
So things like the rankings posts, they have little graphs at the bottom. They will work now if they didn't before.
Yes, in all browsers, yep. Things like comments coming quicker on the newer browsers, pages load faster, downloads happen quicker. Generally, your browsing experience is much better. We were being held back by two things in terms of Side Podcast development, which is why we haven't been doing that much on Side Podcasts. We've been concentrating on books and apps. Partly because developing for old versions of Internet Explorer isn't that much fun. Now, on the one hand, the browser manufacturers were holding us back. That's done now. The next thing we're held back by is people not upgrading. It's very easy to upgrade your browser. It's free to upgrade your browser. And people using old browsers is definitely holding us back now. So we're just waiting for all this new stuff to appear and use into everybody's hands so that they can see the new stuff and we can develop more stuff. Because the next stage of Side Podcast will absolutely need all of these new browsers.
And we don't want to just develop it and shut everyone else out.
Ideally not. I don't really want to get to the point where saying your name's not on the door, you're not coming in.
No.
But if you are using Internet Explorer 6, God forbid, go speak to your boss, your IT department, your school, whatever, whoever it is who's using it. There's no reason to be. You're holding back the web.
One of the good things that the new browsers will show in great style is the Fact Bite Fact Box.
Indeed.
And now I have finished writing my books, which are available on Amazon, by the way. I have more time to Fact Bite Fact Box.
Subtle.
This weekend, I did the race and qualifying, and it was brilliant. I love it. I forgot how much I liked Fact Bite.
Somebody let you off the hook, didn't they? You were Christine Unleashed this weekend without all this pressure to write. And, you know, this author tag lifted off the weight off your shoulders. The blog post came out of nowhere, and the Fact Bite Fact Box was fantastic. Yeah. If you're like Paul Stephen and you're watching the race without any data, you really must go to factbitefactbox.com during qualifying all the race. You covered both sessions this weekend, and it's a fantastic supplementary stream of information to make sure you know exactly what's going on. And when people were asking us questions after the race on Monday, did you see this and what happened here, etc., we could just go back through the Fact Bite Fact Box and just pick out the point and say, well, this happened at this point, then this happened at this point.
Yeah, I find it really useful because I have no memory whatsoever
of any race.
We went out after the race and we came back in a couple of hours later and I had to do F1 Minute and I couldn't remember anything that happened. So I went through Fact Bite Fact Box and then it all came back to me. So I just think that I really enjoy it and I hope that other people enjoy it. And if you are watching the race and you haven't seen it yet, join us for the Fact Bite Fact Box fun.
Absolutely.
And you'll be able to do that next week because it is back-to-back racing.
The fun doesn't stop. There's no time to breathe.
You say fun like, oh, the fun doesn't stop.
doesn't stop.
It might be a good race. I know Hungary doesn't always provide, but sometimes it does.
Last year we watched it from the Renault bunker.
Oh, yes.
That was a high point of last season.
A low point for Renault.